Hello there and welcome along to this week's edition of The Front Page. We've got an explosive show for you this week, primarily talking about the first strike, the first blackout day on British racing in modern history, as the BHA are aiming to combat the impact of the government's proposals surrounding the new racing tax. And we're also going to look ahead to fantastic action on the Knavesmire this week as York's Ebor meeting gets underway on Wednesday with an array of glittering Group 1s. And finally, we pay tribute to two huge figures in the sport and must missed members of the community, Bill Turner and Tommy Murphy. For today's show, I'm your host, Maddie Playle, and I'm joined by Racing Post reporter Matt Rennie, and Irish deputy editor David Jennings is on the line with us as well. First up, DJ, you feeling a bit hungover? Tell us what you were up to yesterday.
Quite ironic that there's a song called Live Forever, because I actually thought I was going to die this morning. I was at Oasis last night in Croke Park, and I hate doing this because there's going to be people watching that are like wish they were there and weren't there and couldn't get tickets. So I hate people like me who are about to say what I'm about to say. But it was just, it's like one of these once in a lifetime opportunities where I grew up with Oasis, and like it just brings back memories. And Patrick Madden actually wrote an article in the Racing Post, a column in the Racing Post on Saturday. And if you're in any way an Oasis fan, you should just read it, because he molds together kind of Oasis and football brilliantly, like his two passions in life. And it was just, and it's so funny because I went going thinking that, you know, Wonderwall, Don't Look Back in Anger, Champagne Supernova were probably the three songs I was looking forward to most. And when I was walking back, I was just chatting to Aoife, and I was like, do you know what? Like, little by little, Roll With It and Live Forever were the three that stood out to me that I thought were just unbelievable. But when you go to a concert, when you know the next song and then the next song, and then you're like, oh, I forgot about this one. It was just, yeah, but I am paying the price this morning, Maddie. My head is banging.
Right. Well, that's no excuse, because we've got lots of juicy talking points to get stuck into. Matt, you and I, it's our challenge to see how many Oasis puns we can get in today's show. What you've been up to? You've had a pretty good week last week, and the Ebor meeting's not even started yet.
Yeah, absolutely buzzing, and I'll be like many fellow Mackhams over the weekend, still revelling in the fact we've made a triumphant return to the Premier League, hammering West Ham 3-0. Honestly, the last three games I've been to in Sunderland, I don't think it'll ever be topped, so it's all downhill from here. Hopefully after another terrific week on the Knavesmire, though.
Yes. You'll be there every day?
Absolutely, every day.
Fantastic. I'm very, very jealous. Let's get down to business then. A serious story to start us off, and that is that all four British meetings on September the 10th have been rescheduled. There's going to be a total blank day without any racing. They were planned fixtures at Carlisle, Lingfield, Uttoxeter and Kempton in the evening. And instead, racing is going to host a major campaign in Westminster against proposals of the racing tax, that harmonisation of taxation. There is racing in Ireland that day. Cork set to stage an evening meeting. But nevertheless, there's an estimated revenue loss of £200,000 as racing is bold and brave in its strategy to try and remind the government how damaging their proposals are going to be. This news was released late on Saturday evening. Yesterday, Racing Post reporters were canvassing opinion from all of the leading figures in the industry, and Race Girls at Pontefract also had their say. We ran a live blog online, which can be revisited, and this is obviously a huge story which is going to roll in the next couple of weeks. Matt, you've been at the forefront of talking about this racing tax in various quarters. What do you make of this proposed blackout day? This is a real big step for racing, isn't it? It came as a surprise, I think, to all of us.
Yeah, racing's on the picket line. Maybe it's not the same as what the miners' strike was in the 1980s and the divisions and the seriousness of that. But racing and the BHA have decided they need to take a stand. We're at that point of desperation is probably the wrong word to use, but in the point of needing to make as much noise heard about it as possible, and they've decided we need to have a blank day in sport to recognise this. All the leading figures, you said, Rafe Beckett, John Gosden, Sir Mark Prescott, have thrown their support behind it, it's fair to say. It feels incredibly unique for racing, to be honest with you, that a lot of the time we would speak about our worries and fears, but rarely take any action, yet now we are. So I think you do have to commend the BHA for that in going forward with it. How effective it is going to be, I don't particularly know. And it's also keen to stress that the meetings that were due to be staged that day have been rescheduled.
Yeah.
So it's not, in effect, it's not a proper strike where you'd completely cancel it and maybe take a self hit and a bit of self harm to see, you know, to make your point clear, like many other strikes do. It's still incredibly major news, though, and it did break through onto the national news outlets. Sky News were at Pontefract yesterday. Yeah. Baroness Harding was there, and Louise Norman from the ROA as well. So it's a major story that will continue to rumble on. We've most certainly not heard the last of it, and it looks like it's, you know, for once in racing, they're going to go through with it. We are going to do it. It's going to happen. And I'm sure it's just what Lord Allen would have wanted in his in tray as well, given he assumes his position as BHA chair on September the 1st. Look, yesterday it was major news. There are a few concerns, is probably an okay word to use. Obviously, the Betting and Gaming Council came out and said they weren't consulted, and they were quite critical of it and said it was a futile gesture, essentially.
Mm.
And we do have to weigh up, you know, that symbiotic relationship between racing and bookmakers, because it's so intrinsically linked with the levy and whatnot. And William Darby, Chief Executive of York, was keen to stress that on the TV yesterday as well. It's just, as you say, very, very unprecedented. I'm almost quite excited that it's going to happen and that we're willing to make such a stand, you know, against something which could effectively destroy the industry.
Yeah, you mentioned there about Lord Allen and it entering into his in tray. Well, historically, the BHA has been quite reluctant to enter into conflict with the government. This is quite a big political stance to take, isn't it? It's very bold.
It's huge, especially given Lord Allen's a Labour peer as well.
Yeah.
Who we would hope for the sport would be in a very good position to do some behind the scenes lobbying with the Prime Minister and the Labour government. So having this so early in your tenure, obviously he had nothing to do with this. Brant Dunshead, the BHA, yeah, said yesterday it was down to the Gambling Strategy Committee that the BHA have got, that they've been working on this for months. So he will be at the Westminster event, though, from understanding, or will try to be at the Westminster event, Lord Allen. So that'll be quite key. It doesn't have the same vibes that of the ferocity and the division the miners' strike had in the 1980s, but hopefully enough powerful voices can be down in Westminster to say to the Labour government, you know, this look at what the industry does, how much money we bring in, even if we're not in the brightest of space at the moment, look at what you could destroy.
Mm, exactly. And in today's paper, John Gosden has added his voice, saying that it will kill communities in British racing. Acting Chief Executive of the BHA, Brant Dunshead, said this latest tax bombshell from the government, if followed through, poses one of the gravest risks to horse racing the sport has ever seen. We're talking thousands of jobs at risk across the supply chain, severely impacted towns and communities, and the irreversible decline of the country's second most popular sport. DJ, what's your reaction been to the news? As I mentioned, there is going to be racing in Ireland on that day, but this is a huge story for British racing.
There'll certainly be more eyes in Cork that day. Could be a big bonus for them. Yeah, a couple of things, I suppose. We do speak a lot about these things and frustrations, and I suppose words are finally becoming actions, which is great to see. And when have the BHA, the Jockey Club and ARC agreed on anything together? So I suppose you can look at the positives of it. And one of the things that surprised me, I couldn't believe there'd never been a strike before, that it was unprecedented, certainly in modern day history. Like, you'd think at some stage something would have happened in racing that made, you know, jockeys not turn up or whatever, or trainers withdraw. You know, you think there would have been something in our history where there was an actual strike, but it seems like there wasn't. So I was surprised about that to start with. I think it's a good show of solidarity from everybody in the sport. And it's only things like these, the kind of nuclear options, that are going to basically make an impact on the people it needs to make an impact on. So, yeah, it seems to be, obviously, it's September 10th. It's not, you know, the first day of York's Ebor meeting that's been cancelled. Like, so it's a, you know, it's kind of like, it's not a massive day, but it's still a day of racing where there will be no racing in Britain. And that's, you know, so rare. So hopefully it will have the necessary impact that it needs to have, because as you well know, Maddie, this is getting very serious.
It is indeed. And that number was bandied around, £200,000 loss in revenue. Matt, I was interested, David Carr was on the scene at Ponty yesterday, as you mentioned, and he was after opinions from all sorts of figures, including racegoers themselves. And one person quoted in his piece sort of said, I don't think it's going to make much of a difference. You know, this, as DJ has touched upon, is not the first day of York's Ebor meeting. It's a pretty lowly day in the sport. And he thinks that the government have already decided what they're going to do, and this is just going to be futile in response. What do you make of those comments?
I can very much understand that, actually. You know, both meetings, two of the meetings last year, I think it was both Carlisle and Lingfield when they were staged last year, got under 1,000 people each. Like, they were sparsely attended.
That's kind of not the point, though, is it? No, it's all about the revenue from betting.
It is indeed, but at the same time, if this doesn't work and the government don't take heed about it,
yeah,
you know, racing, it's great that we're doing it, but we've also backed ourselves not into a corner, but we've backed ourselves into a sort of a longer journey where if it doesn't work, then what do you have to do? Do you then have to step it up a bit more? So do you then strike on, say, Paddy Power Gold Cup Day at Cheltenham down the line, and then if that doesn't work, do you then go even bigger and bigger? So the racing needs to be brave with this.
And it's already been pretty brave.
It's been brave, but it might have to be incredibly brave, basically. And, you know, I think we all have to be in this together in a way. Definitely the horsemen, you know, trainers, jockeys, owners. He said it's rare to have such unity on between most people, given, you know, we have been used to boycotts and stuff before in the sport. We've had prize money boycotts, but with trainers not entering horses in races and stuff. And obviously, 50th anniversary this year of the stable lads and lasses strike as well. But we all need to be in it together. If we're going to keep that way, we need to keep in it together and be incredibly brave. He said, I have some of my reservations about it. I mean, one of the bookmakers at Pontefract yesterday said it is just a Monday and Wednesday that we are striking. But at the same time, it's on the eve of the St. Ledger meeting, so there'll be a lot of talk in the media about the St. Ledger and stuff.
Of course, that Keir Starmer attended last year.
Exactly that, and it'll be interesting to see if he does go to the St. Ledger this year. We just need to be, yeah, so all in it together. We've sort of made our own bed, and we've got to make it as comfortable as we can now.
Indeed. What do you hope comes out of the campaign that's going to be hosted in Westminster?
Well, hopefully not tax harmonisation, not harmonisation of racing betting alongside online casino and slots. But I hope the government will listen to what we have to say. It feels like at the moment that we're shouting our voices, they're shouting our voices, but all from a distance. So it'd be really good if we need the most powerful figures there and the most influential figures to really go there with a bookload of evidence to say, look, this is what will happen if you do this. This is what the sport brings into the communities and the economies. We need to bring it to Lord Allen as well. He said I think he's going to be absolutely integral to this, even though if he's been in the post officially for 10 days. You know, he is a Labour peer, as we said. He's going to have a completely influential voice, and hopefully in the ear of Mr. Starmer and the Treasury. It's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out from there. He said, what else would I'd like to see? Probably less division between the bookmakers and punters and, you know, the horsemen that are doing the strike. Obviously, the BGC statement suggested it's a bit spiky at the moment between the two sides. And he said we do need to come to, we need to almost be in it all together. But at the same time, strikes aren't meant to be all rosy and everyone's like, come on, let's go. You know, strikes do cause divisions within sectors. So yeah, that's hopefully what I'd like to see. But hopefully we need to be in the ear of the Treasury now, because the autumn budget's coming up, and let's face it, we're in a position where it's looking quite bleak at the moment, and we need to sort of change it around.
Yeah, exactly that. Of course, it's not a strike as many people would know it, because we're dealing with horses, and horses need to be looked after, and the stable staff and trainers will still be in action on that day. It's just the action on track which will be missing. DJ, how do you think racing has positioned itself with the government, if we're talking about, you know, a full blank day, people congregating in Westminster? This is a direct action to the government, isn't it? What do you make of how that's been positioned?
Yeah, sure. It's a direct hit. Yeah. And as I said earlier, it's one of those situations where, you know, talking can only do so much. Like, you have to, you know, there are certain steps along the way, and this is the next step. This is getting right in the faces where it matters. And hoping
is it, though,
that it's going
just
to...
with four meetings, would you like to see more?
Sure. What's the next option? Have it on Ledger Day, or have it on British Champions Day? Do you know, like, then you're shooting yourself in the foot completely, like, do you know? So it probably was a tricky one. It was tricky to try and kind of figure out which would be the best option. I think this is probably the first option. You know, it's there's still meetings on. It's not a massive day. There's still meetings on, but it's still a blank day. So I think you're still getting the message across. Look, it's a tricky one, Maddie. It's a tricky one to decide what's the biggest nuclear option available to you. But look, it's a start, and at least people are working together to try and get the right result.
Totally unprecedented, the strike on racing, which will happen on September the 10th. More of that next week, and follow the story live as it happens on the Racing Post website. More content coming your way on that. Now, from explosive action by racing to explosive action on the track, we're going to discuss the impending York's Ebor meeting just after this. Welcome back to the front page. Now, we have a treat in store this week on the Knavesmire. It is, of course, the Ebor meeting at York, a favourite among fans and professionals in racing. Some excellent action, and also some recent updates, Matt, which we're going to talk about. It gets underway, and we've got the Judmont International on Wednesday. The field's just been announced, but very interesting betting activity in the fact that Delacroix was a significant drifter. Whirl was cut for the race, the Ballydoyle duo. Only Delacroix has been declared. What did you make of that?
Yeah, very, very interesting. I know a fair few people, including myself, were a bit like, why is this happening if he's going to be declared and not
run? Did you
run?
Just presume he's not going to run?
Given previous of what we've seen before, you'd assume that a market drift like that, we'd be anticipating a statement that Delacroix wouldn't be running, but he obviously is, and Whirl isn't, and she probably might not be likely to come to the meeting unless she goes to the Yorkshire Oaks.
They said the Vermeer, didn't they, after she won at Goodwood?
Yeah, I think that's more, that'll be probably the way they go, given they'll want to give Mini Hawk, get another Group 1 on Mini Hawk CV against the older horses. It's caused a bit of drama and a bit of controversy, that's to say the least, because a lot of people did think all of a sudden that he's not going to be running. Obviously he now is, and we've got an absolutely corking Judmont International, as we seem to have every year. He's the world's best race, and it's going to live up to it again. I think you just have to say, fantastic that he's turning up, the leading middle distance 3-year-old, we could say, obviously by Lambourne, versus the best sort of older horse in the country in Ombudsman, and then you've got Japan Star Done Under Seal in the mix as well, an underrated French horse in Darris. You know, it's got the servings of an absolute cracker, and exactly what you'd want for your flagship mile and a quarter race in Britain, I'd say. I'm fizzing with excitement for it all, really. To me, York now is, especially with the Group 1, the City of York becoming a Group 1, which we'll touch on in a bit. You've got a Group 1 on every day. It's now clear for me, miles clear of Goodwood as the second best flat meeting in Britain behind Royal Ascot. You know, it's an absolutely corking week, and it's going to start off with an absolute bang. We've got the Derby winner, Lambourne's obviously going in for the Great Voltigeur as well. So there's not much more you could want on a card.
Yeah, there's not. Maybe a few more runners in the Judmont International, though. Only six going to post. Burcastle, the Pacemaker, Down Under Seal, the Japanese Raider, Ombudsman, See the Fire, Darris and Delacroix. DJ, you're obviously a lot closer to the Ballydoyle quarters than either myself or Matt. What did you make of the Delacroix move, the the world shortening. What does that mean in Aidan O'Brien terms?
Well, I was out of the loop on Sunday because obviously I was going to Oasis. So I just was kind of half following it kind of on early on Monday morning, this morning. And I was like, whoa, that's surprise drift. Like, it obviously was a big drifter on Sunday. And it surprised me big time. And even Saturday evening, I had the kids and stuff, so I wasn't really paying much attention to anti-post markets because I knew it had been the plan all along for Delacroix and Whirl had never been mentioned for the race. So it did surprise me. I didn't really mind one way or the other because I've nailed my colours to the mast in my column on Saturday with Johnny Dineen. At 9-4, I said Ombudsman was the best bet of the year, and I still stand by that. I think he's a good thing.
Just for a second, DJ, would you have liked someone from Ballydoyle, Aidan O'Brien, though, to come out and explain or provide context to this market move?
But sure, you can't. You can't. Imagine if your every trainer was to comment on every market move. They'd never put the phone down.
But this is one of the biggest group ones of the season. And I think, do those betting patterns not need to be looked into?
Well, I wasn't working. So if I was working, obviously I would have rang and potentially said to Aidan, you know, what's the story? Is Delacroix still on course for the race? But Matty, you see these drifts all the time. Like it's a common occurrence to see horses drifting at various stages. Who knows? He could have missed a piece of work. He could have not worked particularly well. Maybe Whirl worked better than him. You know, these type of things happen all the time. So I don't know. As I said, I would usually be in the thick of things, but just over the weekend, the way it happened, I was working at the Curra. Saturday, Aidan wasn't there because he was in Deauville. And then I was obviously out of the loop Saturday night and I was off Sunday. So I just wasn't in the mix. Mm. So I don't know.
No blame is being placed at your quarters. Don't worry.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of funny about these drifts. Like everybody thinks, you know, we need any time there's a drift in a big race, a trainer needs to comment on it. I just think these things are pretty common. Like, so I don't know, you see it for Cheltenham all the time, like horses drifting and coming back.
Would you be more concerned if Whirl had been declared and Delacroix hadn't? Do you think the way it's played out has had an impact on how you feel about it?
How I feel about the race itself or
the market move? Now we know that, you know, Delacroix is still on track and Whirl is definitely not going to run. Is that making you feel more comfortable with the drift?
Yeah. I suppose it restores your faith a little bit. Yeah. I see what you're getting at. I don't know. These things, like, and even the drift, like, who knows how it happened or how much money it took for the drift. It could have been somebody, a note or somebody of note backing Whirl. Do you know what I mean? And that could have had an impact then on the drift on Delacroix. I honestly don't know. But as I said at the start, I didn't care which of them ran, to be honest, because I think Ombudsman will win. I watched the Eclipse over and over again, and I thought it was the perfect case of, first of all, it was an incredible performance by Delacroix. It was like one of them kind of surreal, whoa, what the hell happened there? How did the horse win? Like, that looked like he was going to finish last, and now he's after winning. And I would give the horse a huge amount of credit, okay? But what I do think is, watching the Eclipse, from a very early stage, William Buick said to himself, I'm on the best horse. I'm going to take luck out of the equation. I'm not going to get trapped on the inside at Sandown, which can happen. So very early on, he kind of navigated his way to the outside and he played it really safe. So it was like, got to the outside, didn't get into any trouble, got daylight, kicked on, got first run, won his race, and then was nabbed on the line. So I think they're going to learn so much from that. And you've seen at Ascot with Ombudsman, when he was played late and was able to use that explosive turn of foot at the right time, he just blew them away. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think what you're going to see here is Buick showing his hand last. I don't think he's going to be kicking on three out or two out. I think he's going to sit and sit and sit. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if he sat behind Delacroix. I think this time you're going to see the real Ombudsman, and I would be very, very disappointed if he doesn't win. I think he's a seriously good horse, and I just think circumstances probably conspired against him a little bit in that safety type of ride at Sandown. I think he'll win.
It was a tough result to swallow for me. I was on him anti-post at 25-1 in the Eclipse, and I thought he'd won it and just got beaten, run out of it by Delacroix in the closing stages. Well, DJ's firmly with Ombudsman then, Matt. I'm with Dan Underseal. I backed him anti-post, tipped him up in the weekender at 12-1. I think Japanese horses are always underestimated, but we know their class worldwide on the global stage. And that Shima Classic win reads very well now, with, of course, Calandagan coming out, winning his pair of Group 1s, and Rebel's Romance doing well as well. Who's camp are you in?
Oh, jeez, it's such a good race that I don't know. I think I'd probably side with DJ on Ombudsman, because I was also on him in the Eclipse. Seems like we all had our fingers burnt there. I just think it's from a reporter's perspective and a news perspective, it's got so many good angles and narratives that we could have from it. The Japan narrative's brilliant. Obviously, I think the trainer said Danong Desil can't go right-handed, so they've had this in mind for a long, long, long time. So you know he's going to be pitched to perfection for it. I just think it was an amazing performance by Delacroix at Sandown, but York's a completely different test. And I just feel it would suit Ombudsman far better. I don't know if you could ride Delacroix like you did in the Eclipse at York. Just given the contrast in ages between Sandown, obviously one's right-handed, one's left-handed. Sandown's got much variations. York is just a flat track, completely flat. And I think it would just suit Ombudsman a bit better. But I think the most certain thing we know from it is we are going to get the best middle distance horse emerge from this race for the year, which is what we want to see. That's what we want at our biggest festivals.
Let's hope they all show up and produce their best. We get a cracking Gemont International. Onwards to Thursday, and that's the Yorkshire Oaks taking place. Could be a bit of a penalty kick this for Mini Hawk, the Jewel Oaks winner. A strange, her chief rival, might not run, especially if York doesn't get the rein. There's only six in the race at the moment. Whirl is one of those. She's not an intended runner as far as we know. DJ, do you anticipate this to be very, very easy for Mini Hawk? It's bit of a damp squib, isn't it?
Disaster, yeah. It's a terrible race. It's looking through the entries, it's likely to be Mini Hawk versus Garden of Eden,
Killing Queen,
and Bedtime Story. Max, are we that's the max we can have. Like, so you're talking a max of four, possibly three. So I don't know whether they leave in a strange just to see whether the rain comes or not. I think there was a chance at one stage of a little bit of rain on Wednesday. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. And if the rain did come and there was a bit of cut in the ground, I think Mini Hawk v. Strange would be a really fascinating race. But it's probably neither here nor there, because she probably won't. And you'd imagine Mini Hawk will just absolutely bolt up. And you'd like to see her doing something like, obviously, beating Whirl in the Oaks now looks outstanding form. She was workmanlike at the Curragh, yet never looked like getting beaten. So if there were only, you know, a couple of runners here, you'd like to see her do something a little bit special and maybe winning by a wide margin. But it's probably the damp squib of the week, really.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's much more York can do to attract more horses to this race, is there? I mean, prize money's excellent.
Yeah, there's just a severe lack of older fillies and mares over the mile and a half at the moment. If you look, in the Lancashire Oaks, there was only four runners as well, when a strange narrowly beat Scenic. Obviously, Scenic probably would have run here had she not sustained an injury, and she's been retired. But apart from that, you can't think of off the top of your head how many more high-class older fillies and mares are in training this season.
What about Calpana?
Yeah, she was the one who came to my mind. I think they probably want an easier task with her.
Well, and they want the rain as well. And it's just we've just simply not had it this summer. Obviously, I live in York, and I think we've had about 2 days of rain since April or May, like proper rain, not just, you know, just drizzle and stuff like that. And it's just not got into the ground and whatnot. And the team there will be working their hardest, watering wise, to not give it juice in that way, because they're quite reserved about their watering at York itself, and they don't mind running it on quicker ground. So it's just the way, you know, it swings and roundabouts, isn't it, really? Yorkshire Oaks never really attracts a massive field anyway, but we're just lacking those older fillies and mares at the moment.
Even if it was softer ground and a strange did turn up, personally, I'd fancy Mini Hawk over her any day. What do you say to that?
I don't know, because I love both of them. I think I really like both of them. I'd love to see Estrange win purely because she could become a people's horse for the for the rest of the year. And we, you know, we talked about last week. Marcus Townend put it in a column. We need like the best, you know, best horses to be on the best stage and to resonate and go through. Given Estrange is a basically a white horse, and what she can do for the North as well, she'll get extra following there. Given she's trained by David O'Mara. It'd be nice if the sport had her. It would be a great race if they turn up, but they'll probably clash later this season as well. So,
okay, so perhaps that the only spot of disappointment for York this week. If we move on to Friday, hopefully we'll see Trawlerman in the Lonsdale Cup, the Gold Cup winner. He might have his first run back this campaign, but the big group one is the Nunthorpe Stakes, and three horses supplemented for the race. One of the craziest sort of anti-post periods for a group one I can remember. We've got Spicy Marg, Lady Iman, the anti-post favourite, and Rumstar all added to the mix. It's going to look like a big field, a competitive field. We've seen in this division so far how winners have came from all sorts of backgrounds. DJ, you wrote about how great it is that Lady Iman's connections are rolling their dice and doing something that doesn't usually happen in racing. I suspect you're firmly in her corner. I think we can all agree this sort of narrative leading up to the race has been fantastic because it's encouraging people to have a go. Do you think she's actually got what it takes to win it, though?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to take much winning. I think she's got a great chance. You know, only carrying 8 stone... Joe Fanning, you know, I think she's a really straightforward, speedy, juvenile filly, and that gets you a long way in the Nunthorpe. I just think it's just a lovely, like when you read Roger Callaghan's quotes, it's just a lovely kind of, let's give it a lash. We're in the position where we've got a filly who there's no group one for over 5 furlongs for juveniles. She doesn't stay six. We saw that at the Curra. Let's give it a lash. Sure, what have we got to lose? And if she's beaten, she's beaten. At least we can say we had a go. And when he was saying things like that to me, I was just like, my God, that is like the saviour of the sport. Quotes like that to me. And I just think, I mentioned in my column, I think it's stuff like this, unusual stuff and quirky stuff and curveballs that keep the interest in the sport. Like I mentioned Brighter Days Ahead going for the Champion Hurdle when she was odds on favourite to win the Mayor's Hurdle. Like it's stuff like that where you go, whoa, you know, it's not really straightforward all the time, and these things are not foregone conclusions, and you can have a juvenile filly trained by Ger Lyons, ridden by 54-year-old Joe Fanning. Like, it's just a lovely, crazy story. And I think it has a chance of coming through as well. I think she's got a great chance. I think she'll travel beautifully through the race and she'll be bang there, kind of two out. So it's a case of whether she's good enough with the weight concession to win the race. If she wasn't in it now, I hate myself for saying this. I hate myself. And our colleague Tom Park will be watching this. And two of us are singing from the same hymn sheet all season. I've thought for ages that Knight Raider would win the Nunthorpe. He is an absolute enigma. And maybe he just would finish weekly over 3 furlongs in a 3 furlong. Maybe he's just one of them horses that just finishes weekly over every trip. But I just thought there was something a little bit different at Goodwood, where he actually won his race convincingly and was actually going, you know, a proper pace at the line. He wasn't properly folding at Goodwood. The pace he showed in the July Cup was astonishing, really. Like, you know, when the camera angle at one stage, you were looking at me going, whoa, is he going to come back at all? Because he just seemed to be gone. And then he did his party trick and just fell into a hole. But one of these days, he's not going to fall into a hole. And I go back to that run at York earlier on in the season where I thought he actually ran really, really well in that Clipper Stakes. You know, Ina Sharon, who's, you know, just gone completely backwards, won the race. But Knight Raider had everything in trouble at the furlong pole, and maybe he's strengthened up and maybe he's learning to race like he did at Goodwood last time. So he kind of would be the one that I've thought all along could win a Nunthorpe. I know people would be just laughing at me now for saying that, but I do think he'll run really well, Knight Raider. But who's the most likely winner? I think with 8 stone, I do think it is Lady Iman.
Okay, I've yet to fully nail my colours to the mast, but you and I are fond of one horse particular at a nice tasty price, and you actually said, came into the office this morning, I've had a bet in the Nunthorpe. Who is it?
Yeah, it's Washington Heights. I just think, first of all, we're going from 24 hours on from, let's say, a very disappointing Group 1 in the Yorkshire Oaks. This is an absolute barnstormer. Yep. You know, this has got everything you wanted. People might crab the sprinting division this year. It's not very good.
I think it makes it more interesting.
The stories it brings.
How can you say it's good?
Yeah, it's really, really good.
How can you say it's good?
No, not in that way.
Not in terms of the quality, but we think the...
In terms of the stories it brings.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. The stories are there.
Yeah.
But the quality of sprinters at the moment in Britain are horrific, and Ireland.
That's why I'm back in Washington Heights. Because, you know, I really do like the horse. He's a fair bit older than a lot of the horses in the race, but he's got quicker this year. And
I've always thought he wants a flat, fast 5 furlongs.
And the Kevin Ryan camp are now saying, oh, yeah, we know he wants this now. He's getting even quicker. I just think the form of his City Wall Stakes win last time over the course and distance is red hot now. You know, the three horses that finished behind him, two of them have won listed contests, and the other was JM Jungle, who won the King George Qatar Stakes at Glorious Goodwood. So it's, in terms of this year's sprinting division, it's very strong form in terms of the older horses. Obviously, the weight could tell. Could be a tell, but at 16 to 1, double figure prices, you might be in get 20s in some places.
You might have tempted me.
I just find that's very, very appealing. Given what we've seen from the sprinting division this year, is that, as we say, it's not the best. We're in a bit of a dearth for this year's sprinting division.
At least we've got the numbers.
Yeah, we've got the numbers, and everyone's having their turn. And there's no better time really to have a play at a sharp in the race, is there? So. Yeah, Washington Heights for me. I really do think he's got a good chance.
Okay. Well, he's kind of convinced me. Has he convinced you? Let us know who you fancy for York's Ebor meeting in the comments. We've still got another day to talk about. Of course, the feature Ebor is on the Saturday. But first, it's the Skybet City of York Stakes. The first year it's going to be run as a Group 1. There's also the possibility that Rosalian, who was ruled out of the Jacques Lamawa on Sunday last minute, could pitch up here after suffering a bruised foot. All the old guard in here, Matt. Obviously, hugely important for the track that it's been made a Group 1. But in short, who are you most looking forward to seeing in this race?
Well, it probably would be Rosalian now, given what happened. It is touching back on the Delacroix drift and this... You know, what we were touching on essentially was the transparency of trainers and owners. Well, Richard Hannah, it's a bit lose-lose for trainers, I think, the whole these situations, because he did say before Rosalian was ruled out of the race that, you know, he was in good form, you know, still going in top form of the one they had all to beat, and then a little less than 5-6 hours later, he's out with a very, very minor injury. And as Richard said in at Newbury on Saturday, he didn't know that he'd picked up a stone bruise then, but the first thing he had to do was tell the owner, and he hadn't been able to at that point. And whether we like it or not, as punters and reporters, the owners do pay the bills and they have to be told first, you know, whether we agree or disagree with it. So it's just a bit of a lose-lose situation for everyone. You can never ever get it right, but I'm fascinated to see, you know, how he can do this year, in this race, dropping back down to 7, and also the fact that someone made is, gosh, you must be getting sick if you're either back in Rosalian or notable speech these days, because they all just seem to run stormers, but can never.
I don't know if you can
actually
see
get their head back in
notable
front.
Notable speech is the horse just obscured behind Diego Velasquez there, winning the Jacques Lamawa while yesterday. He put in a barnstorming finish, just narrowly denied. Yeah, Kirat course winning the Sussex was the big shock, wasn't it?
Yeah, indeed. And just more on the City of York. Obviously, it's the first 7 furlong Group 1 we've had in Britain. And, you know, fair play for York. They've been banging this drum and supporting the race for a long, long time. And they're going to get the field that a 7 furlong Group 1 should get. Obviously, Never So Brave. Marino Le Charlie is going to be coming over from France, we hope. And it hasn't sort of been impacted by the Hungerford Stakes last week, which is 7 furlong Group 2. You know, there's probably more.
Is it not?
I don't think so at this point, because I think these are proper Group 1 horses that are going into it.
It wouldn't be very much like William Haggis, would it, to put More Thunder straight into a Group 1 like this, would it?
No, nor having the likes of Rage of Bambi, and the only one that probably could have gone it was Witness Stan, but understandably connections didn't didn't want to supplement it, and if you've got an opportunity to get another group two, you would do. Maybe that's something that the pattern committee and the BHA and those who organise the fixtures can look into in the future, because it probably won't be the healthiest to have a 7 furlong group two and a 7 furlong group one within a week of each other. But for this year anyway, the first run of group one, it's a corker. Probably aided by Deauville's losses, York's gain with Rosalium.
Yes. Hopefully we get to see him. A fascinating horse for Richard Hannan. He clearly thinks he's the best miler in the country, and Rosalium hasn't quite been able to show that so far this season. DJ, any thoughts on the City of York? If not, who are you pinning your hopes on in the Ebor?
It's all going to Rosalium, really, isn't it? Best horse in the race, 7 should be fine. I think he'd take the world of beating, and it's mad he shouldn't even be here. It does seem absolutely bonkers that you have 7 furlongs. It's such a specialist trip, and to have a group two and a group one within the space of a week each other is just nonsense, isn't it? It's one of them things when you say
it. It's a specialist distance, but you've got a miler running over it. You know, lots of milers will drop down to run over the 7 furlongs, won't they?
Yeah, I know, but you've got all the same type of horses, and, you know, surely it's going to impact on, when you even think about it, a 7 furlong group one a week after a 7 furlong group two, it just makes no sense. I don't know how we can't figure out a way of not having them within a week of each other, but obviously this is a new group one. One horse, I've been shouting about this horse for a long time, but he's got loads of ability, will need a bit of rein, but if he gets it, he won't be 40-1, and that's Pabrus for Ed Bettle. He's been bought by Watnan. I've absolutely adored this horse from day one. I'll never forget the first day he ran at Thirsk. He ran in a little novice stakes, and he was kind of nibble at in the market, and he ran a real eye-catching race, and then he won at Redcar. And I remember chatting to the late great Alistair Down one day, and he knew the Bettle stable. I said, "Will you ask Ed what does he think of a horse called Pabrus?" I said, "Because I think he's a superstar after he won at Redcar." And he came back and he said, "Yeah, they think the world of him." And I just think one of these days he's going to, and he's still unexposed. He hasn't had that many starts. He only had the 7 starts. I thought last time he was coming back from a break, he was very impressive with Thirsk on his reappearance. Came back from a break in that Criterion, the Group 3 at York, and it was very much a case of he got there, they went a lickety split, went fast, he got there, and then he seemed to blow up a little bit, and he was only beaten a length and a half. I'd imagine they've been waiting for a little bit of rain all summer. Looks like they mightn't get it, but he is a horse who has a big one in him, and if there was a little bit of rain, he could go off single figures rather than 40-1. So I think he's one to keep in your mind, Pabrus, in that group one on Saturday. Look, the Ebor Hip Hop de Loire seems to be the horse that has obviously been completely laid out for it. Was so unlucky in the race last year. One horse I would say is definitely well handicapped is London City. And I just wonder with Aidan, he's only had the 7 starts. We don't know a great deal about him, but I just get the impression that maybe the Ebor, when you look back at that run behind Al Riffin, the Curragh Cup, it just looked to me like it was a pipe opener for something. He just stayed on in his own pace under Ronan Whelan, and I'd say off 104, he could be a bit better than that. So I'd tentatively be with London City in the Ebor.
A course winner over a mile and a half, of course, as well, London City. That's always interesting. I think, Matt, quickly, who are you looking forward towards in the Ebor?
God, I don't know just yet. It'd be interesting to see if French Master drops back down, back into handicaps after running in the Goodwood Cup. Usually probably whoever Ian Williams runs in it, because they always seem to go really, really well each way. I think he's got one for the gutter in there. And I can't remember if it was one for the gutter. He might have run the race before, done really well. But Ian Williams usually has one ripe for that, and they always normally run an absolutely terrific race. So keep them on side, I'd say.
Okay, plenty of tips and insights then for York's Ebor meeting. Looking forward to that next week. We'll be back in just a moment. Now, to end today's show, we're going to pay tribute to two members of the racing community lost last week. Sadly, Bill Turner sustained very serious injuries in a gallops incident last week, and sadly died. A very enigmatic trainer, very popular trainer. Matt was famed for his riding of a zebra, which I don't think many people could achieve a very, very sad loss. His family spoke brilliantly afterwards, and his loss will be felt for some time to come.
Yeah, exactly that. And, you know, we're going into a week where the biggest and the best are going to steal the show. But racing needed characters like Bill, you know, really popular, down-to-earth, grafters in at the lesser levels who kept the show on the road, really. And you know, he was the king of the Brocklesby as well. Yeah. which is a great title to have for the first juvenile race of the year at Doncaster on the first day. So, but racing needs those characters to keep the dreams alive for everyone, really, in terms of wanting to come into sport and those trainers that are operating at lower levels. And he was a really good character, a really colourful character that the sport, you know, the sport so needs so much more of, really. And it's incredibly sad that he's lost his life after what happened. I really hope that Doncaster and the sport can find a way to honour his legacy and what he did. Hopefully, you know, for me, I know someone suggested it on social media, and I thoroughly agree with them that, you know, running the Brockerby Stakes in his honour would be a really fitting tribute to a really good man. As I say, I've spoke to him on course at Doncaster before, and he's a really good man. So he's going to be much missed, and my obviously sympathies are with all his friends and family.
Hear, hear, definitely echo that. Bill Turner also gave the leg up to a lot of promising jockeys in his time, was very much a supportive force to those. So he is in our thoughts. And DJ, across in Ireland, we lost a former champion jockey in Tommy Murphy as well. Tell us about his impact on the sport.
Just on Bill Turner, first of all, like, it's tragic, like, absolutely tragic. Like, it's just one of those horrific things. And, you know, he just came across, I never spoke to him, never met him, but just one of them guys who you just admired for what they've done and how they built themselves up. And yeah, it's just, I think it was it Dave Nevison put a quote on Twitter, his favorite racing quote, I think, was something like, I started off with nothing and I've still got most of it left, or something like that. That kind of a witty quote, which I thought was great. But he sounded like a legend, and I would have loved to have met him. So, my condolences to all the Turner family. Yeah, Tommy Murphy, another legend, like, absolute legend. He was 88. And I think when Aidan O'Brien called somebody irreplaceable, you kind of go, whoa, that's a big statement to say somebody's irreplaceable. And that's the way Aidan O'Brien regarded him. And, you know, I think he was champion jockey in 78, and he was just one of these faces, real familiar, distinguished face. Like, you once you saw him, you recognised him. And yeah, it just seems to have been like an absolute icon around Ballydoyle. And you know, what a legacy, like. And, you know, to be such a talented jockey and then to give so much to the sport afterwards. Yeah, an incredible man by all accounts. Didn't know him particularly well myself now, but yeah, when you read the things that, like, Aidan O'Brien, Ted Walsh, legends are saying about him, and calling basically him a legend, you kind of get to know what kind of a person and what kind of an impact he had in the sport. So yeah, two really, really, you know, big names are gone, which is incredibly sad.
It certainly is. And as said, we pass on our condolences to the family and friends of Bill Turner and Tommy Murphy. That's all we have time for on today's edition of The Front Page. But make sure to stay tuned to the Racing Post website. Pick up our newspaper as well for all the latest on the big developing stories of the moment. Until next time, we'll see you then. Bye-bye.